Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's the Football Hour with Mark Grandy and Kyle Madsen. Wrapping up the week that was with sound from the locker room, highlights from the game, and much more. And now, here's Mark Grandy and Kyle Madsen.
Welcome into the Football Hour here on 95.7 The Game. It has been a while because of scheduling quirks. The bye week, of course, part of that as well. But happy to be back on the Football Hour here on 95.7 The Game. Mark Grandy, Kyle Madsen with you as always. Kyle, the Niners got a win, but we were just talking a second ago off the air before we started here on the Football Hour. That might have been the most frustrating win I've ever experienced as a fan of the San Francisco 49ers. I'm not so sure I've ever felt that way after my team won a football game. It felt like they lost. I mean, they deserved to lose that game. They made like eight different plays in the fourth quarter alone that should have wrapped up a loss, but they still somehow found a way to win 23-20. It was a much-needed win. They're now back above 500 for the first time since week one. It was an absolute gotta-have-it game. I suppose style points don't really matter as long as you got the win, but man, they're really making me question that statement because it was not pretty at all for the majority of that football game yesterday in Tampa, Kyle.
So you said that you've never felt that way about a 49ers win before, or you've never felt so disgusted. And I was trying to go back through because they had some nasty ones in the Harbaugh era. Remember, they had the game in Cincinnati. I think it was week two of the 2011 season. It might have been week three. But they won the game in Cincinnati that ended with the 49ers taking a safety on a punt to like run the clock out. That one was gross. But no, it was, to your point, I'm having a hard time because in the moment I was with you on overtime yesterday with Sterling, it felt like a losing show. Like it felt like a show that we would do after they lost that game. But on the other hand, the more we've kind of talked about it and the further we've gotten away from it, I'm not 100% sure that it wasn't like a good gritty win. Like if they had been 6-2 going into yesterday's game, we're going, they didn't play great, but they figured out a way to win. The defense had 39 yards in penalties on Tampa's last drive there, and they stiffened up in the deep red zone and figured out a way to get a stop, and that was big time. And then the offense, it was Juwan Jennings, it's Ricky Pearsall, Brock Purdy leading him into field goal range, and then Jake Moody putting the three misses behind him, stepping up and hitting a game-winning 44-yarder. That's just, you know what, that team dug deep and got a win when they absolutely had to have it. Like, that's the optimist in me going, okay, maybe. But then also, it was all the problems that they've had the entire year. It was special teams mistakes, getting away from the three misses from Jake Moody, which we'll talk about, I'm sure. The muffed punt was a way bigger play in the game than any of the missed kicks.
Immediately turned into 7 points.
Immediately. The Buccaneers, to that point, in I think it was five drives, had gone 29 plays and 107 yards. And that was in the third quarter. They were not moving the football. If the 49ers just field that punt and it's 10-3 and they go down and score a touchdown and make it 17-3 and now the Bucs that already can't move the football because their receiving core is so badly beat up. Their receivers had 4 catches for 28 yards yesterday on 10 targets. Like, that team's not coming back from 17-3 down. But you give them a 21-yard field and you get a 49ers defense that now has to go back on the field after getting a stop. Oh, and now we have a tie game, and now the game script is different, and the Buccaneers get to hang around. But that's why this is frustrating, because it's every issue. They came out of the bye week, and I think I would imagine you were like me and expecting, okay, we're going to get a different version of the 49ers.
Yeah.
They've had a bye week. Christian McCaffrey's back. The red zone stuff is going to be behind them. They're going to rack up points. Juwan Jennings back. Great point. And I was expecting, like last year's game after the bye week against Jacksonville, the 49ers won 34-3 and just looked dominant. And remember, at that point, Jacksonville looked like a playoff team.
And that was also after a 9-3 game losing streak.
Great point. Yes. And the 49ers went in and lit up the Jags and was like, oh, there's the 49ers. That's the Super Bowl contender. And then they came out in this one and you're expecting that and like, oh, nope, It's not a Super Bowl contender. It's a middling team that's trying to fight for a playoff spot. And I think that's why it was so frustrating.
Yeah, I guess a game and a performance like this, like there's always two sides to the coin. And I think it's something we talked about earlier in the season on the Football Hour here on 95.7 The Game. And I think we used the Chiefs as the perfect example. Like after, I think, 5 weeks, the Chiefs, obviously, they were 5-0. They're still undefeated. But they hadn't really played a complete football game. Like they largely looked kind of meh. Like, but they mastered, they have, and they've continued to do it. I mean, yesterday against Denver, like prime example of it. Once again, they somehow, maybe yesterday was a little bit more luck versus anything else because a blocked field goal in the final seconds, you should have lost that game, whatever.
Yep.
But the Chiefs have mastered the ability of winning when you're not playing great football for 60 minutes. And so there's kind of a little bit of that to this Niner game yesterday, but also it isn't as if, Kyle, the Chiefs are going out there and committing penalties on like four consecutive plays on a got-to-get-a-stop defensive drive in the fourth quarter, one drive after you gave like 17 yards, 15 yards, 14 yards on like consecutive plays to a rookie running back, Bucky Irving, who very good, we all know that, but
Skoducks,
but the Niners should be able to limit him a little bit better than that. Like, there's a difference between just not playing great or not playing up to your level. And I think through nine games now, the Niners have not played up to their level, or at least what we think their level should be, almost every single one of those football games. There's a difference between that, Kyle, and actively trying to lose a football game. And that's what the Niners did yesterday. They actively tried to lose that game, and by the grace of God or whatever you believe in, they somehow still found a way to win. Like, it makes absolutely no sense that this team coming off of a bye, getting everybody back, McCaffrey and Juwan Jennings. You're going up against a team in Tampa who, okay, kind of a good team, but they're coming off of a short week where they were in Kansas City on the previous Monday in overtime against the reigning defending two-time Super Bowl champions. They're down their two wide receivers. Their wide receiver core, as you mentioned, four receptions on 18 Baker Mayfield completions to a bunch of nobodies. They also lose their all-pro left tackle in the first quarter. And by the way, that's the guy who was matching up against your all-pro edge rusher, and you still were trying to lose the game in the fourth quarter. Like, everything went the Niners' way, and thankfully, they managed to sneak out of there with the win, and again, to bring it back home, that is all that matters. You just gotta find ways to win football games, but this isn't, as you mentioned, a game where you can see, oh, they're turning a corner. No, it looked worse than it had before the bye.
So, here's where I if Nick Bosa on 4th and 7, when he has a hold of Baker Mayfield, just falls down with the quarterback in his hands. The Niners are off the field and they're running out the clock. It's a 20-17 win, and Tampa Bay doesn't even get inside the 30. That 4th and 7 play was from the Tampa Bay 37.
And then all those penalties that happen after don't happen.
Yes. Like, this is that they don't even, so that's where there's one or two plays in this game that I think changed the tenor of the game quite a bit, but because it got so tense there at the end, like you said, the four penalties, which is just, I don't know if that's bad luck. I don't know if that was fatigue from the heat and being on the field for so long there. I have no idea. But just a strange sequence after a muffed punt, after three missed field goals, like you said, is just so many things went wrong. And yet, we sit here at the end of the game and how many times have we done this year where you look at the box score and you go, the 49ers,
just domination.
Okay, 5 of 11 on third down, that's fine. 1 of 3 in the red zone, don't love it. That's not great. You got to be better there. But 24 first downs for the 49ers. They go 413 total yards to 215 for Tampa Bay. The 49ers gain 6.8 yards per play to 3.7 for Tampa Bay. 6.8, an elite number. 3.7, that's like worst team in the league territory. So they did everything. They dominated the game in basically every facet. And yet, a little mistake here and a little mistake there, and that's where I get stuck with this Niners team, because it's really clear they're close, right? We all know they have the talent to make a run at the Super Bowl. Like, this team largely was a play or two away from beating the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl in February, like 9 months ago. They were right there,
man.
But they keep coming up, and I don't know what this is, Mark. I don't know. It's every week you go, whether they win or lose, it's like, man, if that play goes different, the game looks a lot different. If that mistake by the 49ers doesn't happen, this game looks a lot different. And I don't know if that's a coaching thing. I don't know if that's just a bad luck thing. Maybe they come out and they beat the heck out of the Seahawks, and they get the ship right, and they win in Green Bay or in Buffalo, and all of a sudden they look like the Niners again. Maybe. But I have no reason to believe after 10 weeks and 9 games that this team is capable of getting through a game without a backbreaking mistake.
Yeah, no, I mean, they've given us absolutely no confidence that that's something that they can do. But, I mean, I'm right there with you. I have to, you know, flatly admit that that is still a very real possibility. Like, I'll ask you this right now. Who are you picking to win the NFC West? I'm still picking the 49ers, and there's not really much of a doubt in my mind, even though Arizona looks a whole of a hell lot better than I think a lot of people were expecting. Seattle's a competitive football team, but I don't think they're anything special. The Rams battling right now on Monday Night Football against the Dolphins. I think they're currently trailing 7-0 at the moment, but this is a competitive division, but I mean, I'll leave you for your answer, Cal, but I'm still picking the Niners to win this division.
I don't want to get too far in the weeds here on the Cardinals, but if I'm betting $1,000, if I have to bet $1,000 on one of these teams, and let's take odds out of it, it's 2-1 every team. I'm probably still picking the 49ers, but they have Seattle coming up. They have another game against the Cardinals. They have another game against the Rams. They're at Green Bay. They're at Buffalo. They still host the Lions, and they have the Bears. And then there's one other game. I don't know. Here's what Arizona's looking at after their bye week: at Seattle, at Minnesota, home Seattle, home Patriots, at Carolina, at the Rams, and home against the 49ers. Like, their schedule's really soft.
That last place schedule really kicking in there to close the season.
Yeah, so that's the one pushback I would have if somebody wants to make the argument for Arizona. Their schedule's a lot softer, but like, you're going to take the talented team, and that's the 49ers. If they weren't moving the football, or if their defense was just incapable of getting a stop, that'd be one thing. But we've seen the defense get stops. They're one of the best from an efficiency standpoint, from a scoring standpoint, scoring like percentage of drives that ends in a score. They're elite. They're at or near the top of the league in every offensive category. And they can't figure out how to put the ball in the end zone. And I think that's been their biggest problem at this point this year. But I guess where I'm stuck is, okay, is there a corner to turn, or is this just what they are? Because we're 10 weeks in, and hey, the bye week and Christian McCaffrey coming back didn't help. It just looked like the Niners. I don't know.
Well, they're stuck. There better be a corner to turn. Otherwise, even if this team does find a way to somehow win the division or make the postseason, they'll lose in the first round of the playoffs. And they're not beating a playoff team right now based on how they're playing. You talking about, like, you know, all the numbers and maybe some of the deeper analytics. And I know some of the numbers you were throwing out there aren't even, you know, like deep analytics, like just yards per play and total yards and, you know, percentage of drives that end in scores for both the offense and the defense. The Niners are elite in a number of those categories. It kind of makes me think about the Eagles of last year, which was kind of the inverse of that, right? Not necessarily like all the analytics, but you kind of viewed them, and some people did, and I credit Mark Willard, who, if you were listening an hour ago, Willard and Dibbs from 2-6, you heard him, and he had this take before anyone I remember hearing it from. The Eagles of last year were a paper tiger. They're whatever they were, like 9-1 at one point, or whatever their record
10
was.
10-1 they
10
started.
10-1. But the point differential was like down near the middle part of the NFC. They're not blowing anybody out. When they would lose, they would lose big. When they win, they always won the close games down the stretch, and they'd find a way to eke it out. And then you look at the Niners, who would lose close games, but they were absolutely dominant when they would win, and they'd win by 20. And you have a little bit more confidence that the Niners were more real than the Eagles. And then lo and behold, we know what happened. The Eagles struggled to close the year. The Niners were the team that kind of began the Eagles' downturn, and they kind of turned into a team that looked more like, you know, their point differential would suggest versus what their record would suggest when they were 10-1. Maybe the inverse is true for the Niners, Kyle. If I'm trying to find a little bit of a reason to be positive, it is, yeah, they're 5-4. Yeah, they've looked like a terrible football team for stretches, even in wins so far this year, and they have some really ugly losses on their resume already, although the Rams loss, I guess you can, the Rams loss is still always going to be ugly because they were without so many players. The Rams are playing better now, by the way. It's 10-3 Dolphins over the Rams late in the second quarter down in LA right now. The Cardinals loss looks a little bit better now because the Cardinals are a better football team than most of us thought, but still, we can get
there
into that.
13 in the second half, man.
I mean, still, it should be a win, no matter what. It should be a win. The Vikings losses, whatever. I'm not sure the Vikings are as good as their record, but I'm getting away from the point. Maybe the takeaway, Kyle, and as we can learn from what happened to the Eagles last year, is maybe trust some of those other numbers versus just what the record suggests, because you look at some of those other numbers, it might have predicted the Eagles' downfall last year, predicted they weren't as good as they were, as their record suggested they were. Maybe the inverse is true for the Niners, and this is a team who, you know, the deeper analytics really love and really believe is still one of the best teams in the NFL, or at least the NFC, and it's just a matter of time before those analytics start actually showing out on the field in more easily observable ways, you know, as in wins and losses. And maybe that's what's coming for the 49ers. That would also go hand in hand with kind of the way that Niners seasons tend to go. You tend to struggle early and then great down the stretch. We just haven't seen the greatness yet. Generally, that turning point has been right out of the bye week, and they got the win, but it still looked just like it has for the first eight games of the year.
I've been thinking about this all day, and what you were just saying about the analytics, and I know there's like DVOA, right? And the 49ers rank super high in DVOA on offense and on defense. They're not as bad as you'd think. I was also thinking about this, just to get away from the analytics of it all. Let's go to punting. The 49ers have punted the fewest times in the league. They've punted fewer times than the Commanders, who went like three games without punting.
That's crazy.
Isn't that insane? they turn it over, or they kick a field goal or score a touchdown. Like that's their offense is so close, and that's why I think that's why I'm so frustrated. If this team was just, hey, you know what? They're just not that good this year. It would just kind of, we could sit here and go, okay, well, they're getting older and they're Super Bowl hangover and all this and that. And actually, like, they're not that. They've been really good in a lot of facets. Just for whatever reason, they can't get over this hump and close out games. And same thing yesterday. Looks like the game where they should go cruise, and then, oh, muff punt. Oh, missed field goal. Oh, another missed field goal. Oh, another missed field goal. Oh, hey, run defense, gone. Run defense is just going to evaporate into thin air for two drives. Like, these just like little things are the difference between the 49ers being 5-4 and battling for a playoff spot, and the 49ers being like 7-2 and running away with the NFC West.
And still so being in the hunt for the one seed.
Yeah, and that's why this is so frustrating. If this was, I've made this point a couple of times, and I feel bad for calling out the Bears, but this is what they're just the team I land on. If this was the Bears, if we were on 95.7 The Game in Chicago, and we were talking about the Bears, and the Bears season was going exactly like the Niners season, we would be thrilled. We would be so happy with how this season was going.
Yeah.
Be like, man, that's a gritty win in Tampa Bay. Like I said earlier, it's a gritty win. You got a big defensive stop. Moody comes back and makes a field goal. Brock hitting Ricky Pearsall and Juwan Jennings down the stretch. Hell yeah. But instead, we look at all these numbers, all these stats, and we go, dude, why isn't this team 7-2? And I think we were all expecting them to come out of the bye week and look like a Super Bowl contender, and they just didn't. And I think that's where a lot of the consternation kind of comes from. But also, you brought up the Eagles. And I can't get this article out of my head. It was written at ESPN, and it was about how the Eagles last year, just kind of the anatomy of their meltdown, right? Because they started 10-1, they lose to the 49ers. I think they finished 11-6, and they first round exit in the playoffs. And Jason Kelce says in that article, like, we were 10-1, you'd expect everybody to be psyched, but everybody's miserable because of how the Super Bowl went. And that was that. I can't stop thinking about that, because you see Debo Samuel go over, and it turns out he was just telling Jake Moody, you know, lock in, lock in. And the fact that Tabor Pepper comes over and he's getting in Debo's face, and Debo's throwing shoves, punches, whatever we're calling that. Kyle Shanahan called it a baby punch. Like that to me is indicative of some frustration boiling over with the season as a whole, not just with Jake Moody on Sunday, But with kind of how the season has been going, like, man, not only can they not get it right this year, but everybody's still got that Super Bowl in the back of their mind. And I kind of wonder if that's the whole Super Bowl hangover thing, like if that's where it's manifesting.
That's interesting. Yeah, I did not read that piece. But, I mean, yeah, at 10-1, and you've got maybe the veteran leader of the group saying everyone is still miserable, even though you're 10-1. And you've got a great chance to go out there and win the Super Bowl again that year. And then, of course, everything went downhill from there. I mean, I think you bring up a good point in terms of, like, if this was the Chicago Bears season, you know, you've got a rookie quarterback picked number one overall, you've got a rookie wide receiver. Generally speaking, you're a team that is trying to build for maybe a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, as you try to win while you have all of these young, hopefully soon to be well paid assets, but try to win while they're still young and relatively cheap. And that is the bottom line for the Niners, Kyle, is the mistakes that are plaguing the 49ers are not mistakes you expect from a team that went to the Super Bowl a year ago, that has been to multiple NFC championships, and that is one of the oldest teams in the NFL when you just look at, like, average age of starting players. Like, obviously, the Niners' age gets a lot younger when you include everybody else. But, like, the key players, the best players, they're all up there. Like, they don't have a ton of time left in the NFL. Like, the Niners are making mistakes that you would expect for a team that's starting a rookie quarterback. And you say, as you said, man, one play goes differently, two plays go differently. Instead of 5-4, we're 7-2, and maybe we're leading our division. Could you imagine winning the division with the rookie quarterback? No, you don't have a rookie quarterback. Obviously, right. Brock Purdy is still young. What, you got George Kittle, and you got Deebo Samuel, and you got Trent Williams, and you've got all of these players that have been there and done that, yet so many of these mistakes, and I know those guys individually aren't making every single one of those back-breaking mistakes, but they've all had their moments throughout the season, and everybody has their moments. I get that. But the Niners, the downfall of this season, what's made it so frustrating is because they are making mistakes that you just simply do not expect them to make, and for the most part, they have not made over the last handful of years, even when they were rookies and when they were youngsters, they weren't making these kinds of mistakes.
It's brutal, man. I hate watching games on Sundays and watching a team win and just hating, just hating every second of it. But hey, here's bottom line. They needed to win that game and they did. Like you said at the top of the program, style points don't matter. And we can be guys on the radio and we could want this and that to be better. And I'm sure the 49ers want all those mistakes to be fixed too. But bottom line, they needed that W in the worst way. And they got it. So maybe they'll stop making those mistakes and stop having those issues moving forward. But it started with a W on Sunday in Week 10.
Yeah, and they got the job done. And speaking of rookie mistakes, Kyle, we can talk a little bit more about this on the other side. This Niners draft class, oh, man. Oh, we spent a lot of time talking about Malik Mustafa. I thought Renardo Green was awesome yesterday. And obviously, I mean, the guy who stole the show, it's Ricky Pearsall. And obviously, a rookie first-round pick, we know that. And we know what happened to him before the season. An amazing, amazing moment for him to get his first touchdown. He did it in the state of Florida, where he went to college as well. Not in Tampa, but in the same state, of course, in Gainesville, a member of the Gators. That was an awesome moment, and this Niner rookie class is really, really turning eyes, and we can talk a little bit more about that on the other side. Also, Juwan Jennings coming back, like a major, major addition. They do not win yesterday without Juwan Jennings. That's how good he was. We can break all that down. Lots of good stuff, and we'll get into the good stuff. I promise you, it's not all doom and gloom.
Stop whining.
They did win the football game, so we got to put a little bit of a positive spin on this, despite everything that that went wrong, and there was a lot, but there was also a lot that we could focus on the positives as well, and we'll do that when we come back. It's the Football Hour here on 95.7 The Game. Mark Randy and Kyle Madsen with you. We're sponsored by the San Francisco International Airport. More Football Hour next on 95.7 The Game.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
now back to the Football Hour with Mark Randy and Kyle Madsen on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Football Hour continues here on a Monday on 95.7 The Game after the 49ers 23-20 win over the Buccaneers yesterday. The Niners are now 5-4. First time they're over 500 since week number one when they beat the Jets to improve, to become 1-0. Since then, they have lost a number of games, have not been back over 500 until this very moment. And that highlight we just heard, Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady on Fox. One of the highlights of the game, Kyle, it was the Brock Purdy play where he extended out to the left in the red zone. You see him kind of identify George Kittle as the play is breaking down and tell him, cut back left towards the corner, I'll find you. And he delivered a perfect ball in the back left corner over the top of a couple of the defenders. The throw would not have mattered if George Kittle wasn't an absolute incredible football player.
Man.
Makes the grab and taps his toes inbounds back left corner for a touchdown. Turned out to be one of, if not the biggest plays in that football game for the 49ers. I think we kind of take George Kittle for granted a little bit, Kyle. He is absolutely incredible. There's no doubt this guy's going to be a Hall of Famer. I think he's had the best season of any tight end so far in the NFL this year. And we talk so much about everything that has gone wrong for the Niners. George Kittle is like number one thing that has gone right. He's had some amazing seasons. This might be his most impressive one yet. He's been so freaking good this year.
Yeah, he's already he's played eight games and he's at seven touchdowns, which is the second most he's ever had in a season. That's crazy. He had so he had the 2019 season, right, where he goes 1,053 yards and five touchdowns. Then he has 634 yards in eight games in the 2020 season. And then in 2021, he goes 910 yards, six touchdowns. The following year, 765 and 11. And I thought that at that point, okay, he's 29 coming out of the 2022 season. He's 29. This is what he's going to be. He's going to be 500 to 700 yards, and he's going to catch 6 to 10 touchdowns. He's going to become more of a red zone merchant, and that's just kind of the path his career is on. But then he comes back last year, 65 catches, 1,020 yards, and six touchdowns. And then, to your point, having an even better year this year. It doesn't get talked about enough because George Kittle is good. It's not like a take, right? Like everybody knows, but. He is, did not believe he would be the player that he's been the last 2 years after that 2022 season. And the fact he's bounced back this way and with Deebo Samuel dealing with injury stuff and Brandon Ayuk out and Christian McCaffrey out, the fact that he is just still that offensive spark where, yep, run that little flow play, that play action right, boot back to the left, Kittle leaks out, hit him, and let him run. The fact that that's still in his bag and still something the 49ers can so reliably lean on, man, I can't say enough about George Kittle. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal player.
Yeah, by the way, halftime Monday Night Football, Dolphins lead the Rams 10-6. Niner fans should be rooting for that score to hold. With a loss, the Rams would be a game behind the 49ers in the NFC West. So rooting for that if you are a Niner fan. I think like the battle Niners fans and maybe Niners media has been fighting about George Kittle with like the overall national perception of him has been, first of all, he's a very good receiving tight end. Maybe not the best because you've got, you know, Kelce and maybe early in Kittle's career you had Gronkowski and you've got Hawkinson and now you've got all these other young guys that are coming in and playing great as well. And that's been fair. Like Kelce's on a different level as a receiving tight end, maybe until this year. But he's always been like the best blocking tight end in the NFL. So like maybe all in all, maybe you could say he's the best overall tight end in football when you include everything. Yeah. The difference this year, and maybe this is where like the fight of the Niner fan has to change. It's not just George Kittle is the best overall tight end. He is still that, but he's also been the best receiving tight end in the league. Like he has been that good catching the ball as well. And when you get the best of both worlds, Kyle, where you're the best receiving tight end and the best blocking tight end in the NFL, you're just miles better than everybody else. Like there's no one in that position right now who comes close to George Kittle. That's how good he's been.
At age 31.
Yeah. Like he's how does he take a step forward at this age? It makes no sense.
I have no idea. But it's remarkable and the 49ers have needed it very much. I thought yesterday the long catch and run that he had that just looked like vintage George Kittle.
Oh, man.
It slipped past the first tackler because he overran it, and then it's running through guys. It's running past a guy who makes a business decision. It's like, man, that's just really good to see. And if the 49ers offense is going to be maximized the way we're talking about, it's going to involve a lot of George Kittle, who's turned into I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he was pretty unproductive in the red zone up until 2022. And it was like, after Brock Purdy took over, I'm pretty sure he has way more red zone touchdowns in the last 2+ seasons than he had in his previous 5 years. I'm pretty sure that's right. And it might be by a lot. And the fact that he has become this red zone threat after not really being that is a really significant deal for the 49ers, especially when it's like, hey, Ricky Pearsall is still getting adapted. Juwan Jennings, good player. I thought he was phenomenal yesterday. But when Brock Purdy needs a safety blanket or a bailout, the fact that he can so reliably go to George Kittle, and it's not Jason Witten, right? Like, Jason Witten was amazing, but he would catch the ball and then fall down. there's a big, like, Zach Ertz, right? Zach Ertz, big safety blanket option. But there is a Twitter account dedicated to whether Zach Ertz broke a tackle. And after every time he catches, it just says no. That's the tweet.
Tyler Lockett
out
of tight ends.
Yeah, man. I just like I said, it's hard to talk about George Kittle because it's like, yeah, he's good, but if he's on track to make an All Pro team, be a first team All Pro again this year, it'd be his third first team and his fifth overall All Pro selection.
Pretty good.
Just remarkable.
I think part of, I don't know if like career turnaround is the right phrase, because he obviously has always been so good, but maybe like the renaissance.
Renaissance.
Career renaissance, like, for Kittle. Obviously, a lot of that has to do with who the quarterback is, and Brock Purdy is a step up for a Niners quarterback. So, I mean, there's no doubt Brock Purdy is the best quarterback George Kittle has ever played with, and I thought Brock Purdy yesterday, Kyle, had himself a really interesting football game, because certainly through the first half, maybe even through the first three quarters, like, it was an average day. It wasn't anything all that special. I'm going to sound like a Brock Purdy hater. A lot of it was, and he had good numbers, like, really at every point in this football game, he was thrown for lots of yards. He did not turn the ball over, a couple of touchdowns, and really at any point you check in, like, at the end of the first quarter, at halftime, after three quarters, you're like, wow, Brock's having himself a day. But it didn't really pass the eye test, at least for me. It was a lot of, this is where I'm going to sound like the Brock Purdy hater, it was a lot of underneath throws, it was dinks and dunks, and it was Kittle rumbling for a lot of yards. It was Pearsall rumbling for a lot of yards. There was a Debo one where he had a lot of yak. I mean, that's a difference in this game as well. The yak was back. The Niners getting yards after the catch in this game much better than they have for the rest of the season, kind of getting back to what they've done in years past. But then after three maybe relative quarters, at least in my mind, from Brock, Kyle, the fourth quarter was one of the best quarters of football I've ever seen him play. He was absolutely amazing. The throw in the face of pressure, like almost unblocked pressure, when he throws it over the top down the right side to Christian McCaffrey. Free, absolutely perfectly placed football. The highlight that we just came back from break with, the George Kittle touchdown where he extends the play and then directs Kittle where to run, makes that throw, and then every play that he had to make on the game-winning field goal drive when they get the ball with like 40 seconds left, like just pinpoint on every single play. Maybe not any individual throw was like, wow, jaw-dropping, amazing throw, but every one of them was on the money, put it where his receiver could get it, got out of bounds, got some extra yards, whatever the case may be. It was three okay quarters, and then it was maybe the best I've seen Brock Purdy play in a long time. That fourth quarter was absolutely amazing.
10 of 14 for a buck 60 and a touchdown in the fourth quarter.
That's pretty good.
Not bad. Not bad. Okay, so here's this is where I think I definitely am, and I think 49er fans in general are recalibrating how to react to a tough quarter from a quarterback. Because Jimmy Garoppolo bad games used to be like, oh, he's going to throw a backbreaking interception, and he's going to take a couple of bad sacks, and he's going to throw some passes. He's going to take a safety on accident. Like, it was right. It was borderline disaster. But Purdy starts that game yesterday, and he's missing high, and it's just that's just it. He just missed a few throws early, but he's played at such a high level that there's a different expectation for him. Where it's like, hey, man, that's the throw that he usually makes. He missed a couple early in the game. I think there was one to Kittle. There was another one to Pierce on a deep out that he just airmailed. There was one, I think, to Jennings over the middle that he airmailed.
High one to Juwan that Juwan tipped up, and I was scared it was going to get picked, but it fell.
Yeah,
it fell incomplete.
Yeah, where he's rolling right and threw it back to his left. Yeah, he just missed high early. I don't even mind. Like you said, the short throws where he had the 132 yarder to Samuel, where it's just where he stepped up into pressure and kind of made a little jump throw.
Which
I thought was great. The throw you mentioned to McCaffrey down the sideline, I thought that was a phenomenal throw. Like, that's just an excellent quarterback play, knowing where the safety is, knowing that you can put that ball in the air with some loft to let your running back play center field. That's knowing your receiver, that's knowing the coverage. That's great quarterbacking. And then the improvisation on the Kittle touchdown. Like, all of these things are what I want to see out of Brock Purdy. I don't even mind the throws for Yak. Like, I wanted to see him manage the games more. He hadn't been doing that.
Yeah, take the easier things.
Yeah, and push the ball down the field when it's there, like 100%. Like, I don't mind it. I'm not saying everything needs to be dink and dunk, but it felt like he was taking sacks and creating pressure by holding the ball too long, by trying to push every single throw down the field. And yesterday, Christian McCaffrey back, and oh, look at that. Oh, pressure. Here, get it to 23. Oh, it's second and long. Okay, here, we're gonna get it to third and manageable. Let's get it to Christian McCaffrey here. Oh, Christian McCaffrey 1-on-1 with the linebacker. Oh, throwing this one up. I'm gonna let him win that battle. Like, that's what I was hoping to see from him with McCaffrey back. And it wasn't perfect by any means, but those are the bigger takeaways for me, more than a handful of the missed throws early in the game. But you said it, dude. 10 of 14 for a 160 and a touchdown in the fourth quarter. You'll take that from your signal caller every time.
Yeah, and when it was like money time, like that's when he was at his best. And that, as much as we like, you know, oh, are you throwing 2 or 3 touchdowns a game? Are you not turning the ball over? Are you throwing for 300+ yards a game? And that's all, you know, good and fancy, and we want to see that. And that's often how we measure, like, great quarterbacks versus just good quarterbacks. The way I measure it, Kyle, is you're down or it's tied in the fourth quarter and you need a score. Do you go get me that score? And Purdy was 2 for 2 in that case yesterday. Like, that's what the elite ones do. And not one game makes an elite quarterback. I know that. But Brock Purdy is starting to develop a little bit of a trend where his team needs a score, either because you're losing late in the fourth or you're tied, and a score, any score, wins you the football game. And often, relatively often, at the very least, he puts his kicker in position to win the football game. And he did that twice yesterday, once scoring a touchdown and the other time setting Jake Moody up for a redemption and the game-winning field goal.
The other thing on that last drive, I have a real quick, do you know how many yards the 49ers ran for in the fourth quarter?
How many they ran for in the fourth? I can't imagine it was very much. I mean, they had no room on the ground all game long.
It was 3 yards. They ran for 3 yards. It was 4 carries for 3 yards.
Was that a Purdy scramble by chance, or was that McCaffrey?
No, it was a Debo end around.
Oh, a Debo, not even McCaffrey.
I thought it was a weird play. We don't have enough time to die. Debo, that was a play that Debo houses 2 years ago.
Yeah, those haven't worked all year.
And he got run down by a defensive lineman. That was weird. I think he's more hurt than they're letting on. But anyways, the numbers in the fourth quarter, you want to talk about, we talked earlier a lot about dominating the fourth quarter. I just read Purdy's numbers. And I want to talk about that last drive, but I'm stuck on this. The Buccaneers had 7 first downs in the both teams scored 10 points, by the way. The 49ers gained 163 yards. Tampa Bay gained 43. Brock Purdy threw for 160 yards. Baker Mayfield threw for 25.
Baker Mayfield threw for 116 in the game.
The 49ers in the game, every player who caught a pass had a reception of 30+ yards. The Buccaneers' longest play of the game was 15 yards. Like, this is so silly looking at this. So I wanted to get the Buccaneers 7 first downs, 4 by penalty. Like, just it is ridiculous that game was close yesterday. But anyways, that final drive and talking about Brock Purdy, the most impressive part about that to me was it was not. The Saints game in 2019, Garoppolo throwing it short to Kittle on a 4th and 2 and Kittle rumbling down to get him in field goal range. It was no Debo Samuel. It was no George Kittle. It was no Christian McCaffrey. It was Juwan Jennings, and it was Ricky Pearsall. And Brock Purdy got those dudes down the field into scoring range and got the game-winning field goal set up, and Jake Moody hit it. That is the thing that jumps out the most to me. is that in crunch time, the 49ers weren't leaning on their superstars. They were leaning on Juwan Jennings and Ricky Pearsall.
Yeah.
And that was super impressive from those two guys and from Purdy.
Yeah, and that was good enough from Brock. You did bring up Christian McCaffrey, not used a ton on that drive, but he was used a decent amount in his return from injury. His first game of the season comes in Week 10 in a win, Niners 23-20 over Tampa Bay. His numbers, Kyle, 13 carries for McCaffrey, 39 yards. Niners tough sledding on the ground all game long. Credit Tampa Bay for kind of taking away the Niner run game. But McCaffrey, as he is able to do, 6 catches for 68 yards, so he total over 100 yards from scrimmage, and he has 19 touches in his first game off first game back from injury off the bilateral Achilles tendonitis. What did you make of Christian McCaffrey's usage? It seemed mostly like McCaffrey, he's back, and we're going to treat him like running back one without a ton of restraint. I mean, running back carries, 13 for McCaffrey, 1 for Jordan Mason, 1 for Isaac Garendo. Purdy ran 4 times. Debo Samuel ran 3 times. It was Christian McCaffrey and then a lot of space before any other running back. They used him like he's fully ready, as you expect he would be. But what did you make of Christian McCaffrey's usage yesterday?
It wasn't what I would have done, but you see why. Like, their running game just looks better with him in it, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
like, the way he moves, you see why they lean on him so much.
Yeah, and the big one didn't ever hit yesterday. It will eventually. Like, I would not be shocked if McCaffrey has a 50-yard run at some point next week. Because that's just what happens when McCaffrey touches the football. But you can tell that there's a little bit more juice to it, even though it did not ultimately happen yesterday.
Yeah. So that's you see why, right? He only ran it 13 times. I think the 30-yard throw down the sideline was the only, like, designed, hey, we're going to throw it to Christian McCaffrey on this play type of play. I think his other 5 catches were mostly checkdowns. I'd have to go back and watch again, but that's how it seemed to me. So I don't mind the 19 touches, especially if it's just going to be 13 carries. The question for me is going to be, all right, they had 22 carries, and I think Purdy had a couple of scrambles. So what, like 20 designed carries yesterday?
18 between McCaffrey, Debo, Mason, and Garendo. Yeah.
You said 18?
18 between those four.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see what it looks like in a game where they get 33, 34, 35 carries. Is that 24 from Christian McCaffrey and 8 or 9 from everybody else? Or is it a game where, okay, the run game's working, so McCaffrey's carried it 3 times in a row, we're going to get Jordan Mason some run? Or Isaac Garendo, or whoever it is. Like, that's kind of what I'm intrigued to see as we move forward here. But I have no reason to believe that Shanahan's going to let up off the gas with McCaffrey. But, like, if you want him for the playoffs, you might have to.
Yeah, so let me ask you. I mean, are you comfortable if McCaffrey, say, the rest of the regular season is touching the ball 25 times a game? Like, obviously, the Niners are at their best when McCaffrey is touching the ball as many times as possible. But we also can realize the Niners got into this mess this year because they did not have McCaffrey available for the first 8 games of the season. And you want to make sure you have him as ready as possible for the rest of the year. So it's 25 carries, 25 touches. 25 touches. Is that too much? A game for McCaffrey?
Yes. That'd be nuts. 25 is a lot. I think he was 21.6 last year. Is that right? About 22 touches
a
game?
Something like that.
So I think if you're in that range, if you're between 19 and 22, I don't think that's so bad. The question for me is, like, what type of touches are they? Is it a check down where he's getting into the middle of the field and falling forward for a gain of 8? Or are they between the tackles, just tough sledding like we saw yesterday against Tampa Bay, where, like you said, just not a ton of room. There were defenders in the backfield a lot. Like, those are the carries that worry me more than the little check downs or the outside zones. That's kind of what I'm going to be keeping an eye on. But yeah, 25 would be too many. To answer your question, straightforward.
Do you want to hear from Kyle Shanahan? He addressed this earlier today on his weekly conference call with the media. He was straight up asked about Christian McCaffrey's touches and his usage. And we can listen and we can try to figure out what he means by this. Here's Kyle Shanahan on McCaffrey's usage.
I don't think we rode him pretty hard, but no, I think we're good with it. And we'll see how this year goes. That was our first game with him. I think he had 19 touches. I think it's a little less than he had last year, but, you know, it was our first game back with him. we didn't want him to go too many series in a row. We started taking him out. I think we did it in between two series in the first half, and once we only had one drive in the third quarter, and we got into that fourth quarter, we weren't taking him out on the fourth. So we'll see how the year goes with him.
So he says he doesn't think the Niners rode him too hard. 19 touches, and he said, yeah, that's a little less than what he did last year, somewhere around 21 or so. I guess maybe the difference is if it's 21, maybe 22, you're all right with it. But if it starts creeping up above that, you might be a little bit worried that even though he hasn't played the first eight games of the year, you start getting a little bit concerned if he can last the rest of the season and be as good as possible come the postseason potentially. But the other thing that you have to balance, Kyle, if you are the 49ers, is you know, you're not 8-1. You're 5-4. You got to do everything you can to get into the dance, and getting into the dance might require a little bit more McCaffrey than maybe you're comfortable doing. That might be the reality that you're facing. Like, in a perfect world, you have the division wrapped up by Thanksgiving again. Maybe you have the one seed wrapped up a couple of weeks after that, but that's not what is going to happen this year. So you might need to see a couple of games here and there where McCaffrey's touching the ball 25 times a night.
It reminds me of, like, in a baseball playoff series, you're down 3-2 in the series, and so you have to bring in your starter maybe late in the game because you're just trying to win this game.
Oh, I love that.
And you'll worry about game 7 tomorrow. Like, that to me is kind of how you have to handle Christian McCaffrey the rest of the way. Like, you got to get there first.
Yeah.
Like, there's no use quote unquote resting him.
Bring in the closer in the seventh inning. Come on.
Right. If he's in danger of hurting himself, then sure, that's a different conversation. But if the question is just like, ooh, workload and wanting to make sure he's fresh for January, you got to get to January. Like, you got to get there. And I don't think they can get there without Christian McCaffrey playing, what he played, 56 of 64 snaps yesterday? That's 88%. That's 88% of the snaps is about what I expect to see him play. And I think the touches will fluctuate based on game script. What I do think we'll see is if the 49ers get up big, let's say next week against Seattle, they're up 20 in the fourth quarter. That's where I think you will see Christian McCaffrey come out of the game.
Oh, you better.
And you'll see Isaac Arendo and Jordan Mason salting the game away. I don't think you're going to see a lot of Christian McCaffrey late in these games if the 49ers think they have it in hand.
No, if Christian McCaffrey takes a single snap in a football game where the Niners have a 3-score lead in the fourth quarter, that is a problem, and someone needs to answer for that. Because
we will hold their feet to the fire.
Yes, I will. He missed 8 games because of bilateral Achilles tendonitis coming off the offseason. If he touches the ball once, if he's even in the huddle once when the Niners have a 3-score lead in the fourth quarter, I am going to freak out. Like, that absolutely cannot happen. And this is from someone who loves watching Christian McCaffrey play football. I don't love it that much, okay? You got to protect him. I mean, part of the reason why he probably missed 8 games, Kyle, was because the Niners just simply did not hold him out of practice. He went too hard in practice and hurt himself even further. You got to protect this guy from himself. So, yes, I'm with you. You're also playing the score of any individual game. And if it's out of hand, one way or the other, limit Christian McCaffrey's touches. Please, I am begging you.
Yeah, and I think my guess is that's what we're going to see. They know they need him, but I think they're going to be a little more judicious about when they ride him and when they don't.
Yeah. Yeah,
they gotta get. But first of all, like, the bigger get, can you get a 3-score lead,
please, and then not blow
can
it?
Can you get there first?
Yeah, I mean, but the other side of this, and we gotta get out of here in just a second. The other side of this is they have had 10-point leads in fourth quarters, and they've still lost those games. So maybe there isn't a point where Shanahan ever feels comfortable until it's like a 20-point lead with 4 minutes to go, and then he'll finally take McCaffrey out. But I guess we'll cross that bridge. When we get there. Up next, Kyle, for the 49ers is the second and final game of the regular season against the Seattle Seahawks. That's in Santa Clara, Sunday, November 17th, 1:05 kick here on the West Coast. We'll have you covered, of course, on Sunday pregame and postgame as always. But Kyle, here on the Football Hour on this Monday, that's all we've got time for. A pleasure as always, and I'll talk to you on Sunday.
Can't wait, Mark. See you then.
Sounds good. That's Kyle Madsen. My name is Mark Randy signing off. Thanks so much for tuning in. This has been the Football Hour. We'll talk later on 95.7 The Game.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.